Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of The Command Zone. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
How are you guys doing this week? I'm doing swell. How are you doing this week, Josh?
Swell.
Swell. Swell's a good word.
I don't think I've said the word swell maybe ever, but I feel ever. Swell, Jimmy.
Ever? Oh, that's a shame.
We're in the middle of a Leave It to Beave It, Beaver, Leave It to Beave It.
Leave It to Beave It.
Leave It to Beaver episode. How are you doing, Jimmy? I'm doing swell.
Swell, buddy. Thanks. How about you?
Does anybody listening even know what Leave It to Beaver is anymore?
I don't know, but I want to know what Leave It to Beave It is.
Leave It to Beave It.
Or Leave It to Beavis and Butthead. Yay.
That's the remake that they're the movie that they're going to release. Because basically every TV show that you've ever heard of, they're trying to develop into a movie.
Yeah, every Disney movie is getting turned into one as well, live action. They're like redoing them again too.
Well, those are just fairy tales.
Like, I know.
The things we call Disney movies
are fairy tales.
Are just fairy tales.
Grimm's fairy tales.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. The glass slipper fits.
It does fit, and she's gonna find her way to the prince. It was actually funny when I watched
it. It's going to be really interesting to see what they do for the sequel for Cinderella 2. So, because you know they're going to. It made a gajillion dollars.
Yeah. I also wonder what they're going to do. I mean, apparently Ian McKellen is cast as the clock in Beauty and the
Beauty
Beast.
Beauty and the Beast?
Yeah. I mean, are they going to do like CG clocks with Ian McKellen's voice? Like,
maybe they'll do that that forced perspective thing that they do for Lord of the Rings.
For Hobbits. You make Ian McKellen the size of a desk-sized clock.
He did it the opposite way, right? They made him giant.
They made him big.
So, yeah.
Oh, boy. Anyway, let's go over today's topic very quickly. We are doing the top 10 green cards for Elder Dragon Highlander / Commander.
Yes, green, we've done white, we've done red, mm-hmm. We did artifacts, and so this is a series that we're doing. We'll probably get done with all of them colors, and then we'll start doing dual colors and blah, blah, blah. So green was it's tougher than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff in green, and I didn't realize it, but I think green is actually my second most played color or my top most in my decks outside of red.
I'm blue and then green also.
Yeah, I think that's why I'm usually teamer. Mm. In terms of color mm-hmm, identification. Mm-hmm.
I think I prefer Bant, but...
I like Bant, too.
Yeah. I also like Esper.
But how could you not have
that doesn't
red,
have green.
Josh, red.
Yeah, red's probably my least played color.
Yeah. See, I'm either teamer or I am Marchesa's colors. Marchesa's colors.
Grixis,
yeah. Which is just switching out green and black.
So you like blue and red.
Yes,
and
I definitely like blue and red.
Yeah.
Yeah. Splinter's win, baby. Here we go. A quick shout out as well to Gavin Gorka, the son of one of our listeners, Robert, who I hear you're a big fan of VGHS, Gavin. I'm a big fan of you, buddy, because you're a big fan of VGHS. I'm glad that you like the show and enjoy the show. If you have Twitter, tweet at me. Let me know, let me know what your favorite part is or something you laughed at, and I'll tweet you back, bud.
Sweet. VGHS is awesome.
It is pretty awesome. If you guys haven't seen it, we at one point plugged it every week of the show.
Yeah, you know, we should have plugged it. Well, it's still timely because it's on Netflix.
Yeah, season 3 just hit Netflix starting April 13th until who knows, forever, hopefully.
Forever ever?
Yeah, it's actually forever ever.
Forever ever?
It's actually funny because people will tweet at me and be like, oh my gosh, season 3 is out. I'm like, yes, in a matter of speaking, it is out. It also came out in October, but now that it's on Netflix, it's amazing how many more people get to see it because of that, which is really cool.
Yeah, it makes it easier for people to watch it. And, you know, this is maybe the first time a lot of people get to watch it, like, on their TV set, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which is a different experience. I mean, not that you couldn't before, but a lot of people don't have that setup at home.
Yeah.
And
the show looks really good on the TV because we filmed it with really nice cameras.
Yeah, and the scope of it is really large that you want as big a screen as possible and as nice of a sound system as possible. So the whole experience of watching it can be very different than if you just watched it on your iPad or your laptop.
Yeah. And we did mix it for 5.1 mm-hmm. surround sound, and we had an orchestra record a lot of the pieces as well. So, you know, there is a lot of merit to seeing it on the big screen. And it's funny that most people watch it on their phones or computers, considering it was something that, you know, it's like 2K resolution. It's huge.
Well, and the sound, I think, is a really good point. Like, all the car racing and the explosions and the gunfire and
much
all that stuff.
Much more realistic.
Yeah, and it'll just feel like you're in the middle of it a lot more. So
yeah,
I would definitely encourage people to check it out, maybe even if you've already seen it.
Yeah, super immersive. Also, we were on the Brainstorm Brewery podcast last week, which is really exciting because those guys are great, and it was a real honor to be on the podcast.
Yeah, it was super fun. The Brew Crew, Marcel, Corbin, Ryan, Jason Alt, who has been on our show,
mm-hmm.
they're big finance experts. So you can definitely find them on iTunes, or you can go to brainstormbrewery.com and you can find the podcast there. Also, they have a whole bunch of articles.
Yeah.
Not even always finance related, but a lot of it is. We often point people in the direction of that podcast when they ask us financial questions.
Yeah. I mean, these guys know what they're talking about when it comes to magic finance.
Yeah. And I mean, Ryan and Jason, I believe, and well, Corbin does some coverage stuff, but mm-hmm. Ryan and Jason make their living buying, selling, trading magic cards.
Yeah.
Like, so they know all about finance because they literally, that's how they make their living. So,
yeah.
You know, they know what they're talking about.
They definitely do. And a quick note, their podcast is explicit, so it does have some explicit language in there. So parental discretion is advised.
Yeah. Sorry, Gavin. That's probably not for you.
Yes, Gavin.
Gavin's 7 years old, so
yeah.
he's not ready for that.
And again, if he's investing in magic cards and thinking about it that way, I mean, he's got a bright future ahead of him anyway. So
I mean, he's probably halfway to paying for college already.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, actually, Robert, that's Gavin's dad.
Uh-huh.
You know, go listen to Brainstorm, and you know, maybe in about 11 years when you got to pay for Gavin's college, you'll be ready.
Yeah. I mean, you have to make some big specs to pay for
buy
tuition.
A lot of utter ends. That was my pick of the week.
That was your pick of the week. Yep, indeed. All right, let's talk about the top 10 green cards for EDH. So we explain this each time we do it, but we'll do it again. Both Josh and I have made two separate lists of what we think are the top 10 green cards in EDH under $25.
Around
there, yeah. We're not going to stretch much past that because we could just say Gaia's Cradle.
And it's unrealistic for most people for naming like really expensive cards.
Yeah.
So we try and keep it reasonable. But we might stray slightly above or below that. But in general, mm-hmm. we want to stay close to or below the $25 mark.
And ideally, it's closer to the $5 mark. I think those are the true winners, the ones that everyone can afford easily and are incredibly powerful. But unfortunately, some of these cards are a little more expensive, but we try to keep it in that range in general. The way that we come up with the lists, we have criteria and we have a lot of things that go into it. And it's different for both of us because if you guys look at our old list, like we've had different number ones for almost every single one we've had a different number one.
Yeah, I think so.
Than the other person did. So what do you use for criteria?
I use a combination of just the mana cost. So obviously if something's cost 8 or 9 mana, then it's hard for it to ever be very high on the list because there's mm-hmm. just some percentage of games you just don't get that amount of mana.
Yep.
I also use I wonder how useful it is in a variety of decks. So, you know, does it pair well with all the other colors? Like would a blue and green deck also want this, or is mm-hmm. it only like covering like some weakness that red has and all the other colors have better ways to do it? So that's something I think about. The quadrant theory.
Yep.
So that's a Marshall Sutcliffe special from Limited Resources. I think it's actually Brian Wong.
Yeah, I think Brian brought it to the show.
It's this idea that there are quadrants within the game. So there's the developing stage of the game. There's when I'm winning the game. There's when I'm at parity in the game. And there's when I'm losing the game. Mm-hmm. So this is different for our format in that because of the way that it's set up with so many players, you're losing the game more often than you're in those other stages. But so still is important. And I'd say in our format, actually, when you're ahead in the game, when you're winning, is in other formats, you don't need a lot from that position.
Right.
So cards that are good only when you're winning aren't very good in other formats. But in ours, you know, if you look at most EDH games, there's a point where somebody's ahead, and oftentimes the first person who's ahead in the game doesn't win the game. So being able to close out a game, cards very that important. Sort of slam the door shut when you're already ahead, is more important in our format than others.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and the last thing I think about is sort of, does the card either enable or combat strategies that are really prevalent in our format? So token decks are really prevalent. Mm-hmm. Voltron decks are really prevalent. But not just types of decks, but also like effects. So board wraths are super prevalent. So, you know, does it either wrath the board or does it stop wraths? You know, that kind of idea.
Pretty much. And I pretty much use mostly the same criteria. And, you know, if I'm being hypocritical at some point, we'll find out very soon. But let's just start off with our lists, and we both usually start at 10 because that's how long the list is.
It would be anticlimactic if we start with one and counted backwards.
Yeah, that wouldn't be very fun. And then we'll go back and forth until we reach our number ones, and then we'll have some honorable mentions as well, and then we'll talk about a little bit more. And of course, as always, we want to hear what you guys think if we miss something, because there have been cases where, I mean, it's EDH is covering a huge part of Magic's history. Mm-hmm, so, mm-hmm. Yeah, let us
know. It's funny to look at the lists. I don't know if funny is the right word, but it's interesting to look at our lists, and you can really see our personalities, our psychographic personalities.
Like, yeah, it's true.
You're a little bit more Timmy than I am. I'm a little bit more Johnny. And so as a result, like our lists really do show that.
Excellent. Well, I'm excited.
You want to go first?
Sure. My number 10 is the one, the only Yavimaya Elder.
Oh, very good card.
So Yavimaya Elder is a card that was printed in the Commander sets, and it's also been around for a while. I think it's been around since, like, Tempest, maybe? Anyway, it's been around for a while. It's one in the green and the green. It's a 2/1 creature human druid. It's definitely not Tempest. It's something else. It's the one with a little bottle. Urza's Legacy? I think Urza's Legacy. Urza's Destiny. There we go. I'm still trying to get all the little pictures and figure out where they're from. But
I have no idea looking at the pictures.
Like, I know, right?
I couldn't even tell you if it was Fate Reforged or not, and that was like yesterday. So
yeah. So anyways, the 3-mana human druid, that's a 2/1, and when Yavimaya Elder dies, you may search your library for up to 2 basic land cards, reveal them, and put them into your hand if you do shuffle your library. And you can also just pay 2 to sacrifice Yavimaya Elder and draw a card.
So you can draw a card and go do the other effect.
Yes, exactly. So you're sacking him to essentially trigger his own effect and get 2 basics, and you're not putting them into play, but you are putting them into your hand, and then you're shuffling your library, and you're drawing an extra card on top of that. So he is a 3-for-1.
Yeah, and usually if you do it, you can get a free block out of it. Mm-hmm. So he's not just a 3-for-1. He actually prevents some damage sometimes,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he'll stand in front of something and block before you have to sack him. The reason he's at number 10 for me is because I think he's a very good card in a lot of stages of the game, just because he's card draw at its very worst. Mm-hmm. And he does actually significantly put you in a position where you are safe to hit land drops if mm-hmm. you are missing colors. And so he does a lot of fixing. And I think the worst time is probably when you're behind in a game. But, you know, at the same time, getting the lands to play the cards you need is so important in this format, and drawing cards in general is important.
At the worst, if you're behind and it's later in the game, he replaces himself.
Yeah,
though.
Exactly.
So, you know, even if you don't need those 2 lands, you still draw a card. So it didn't mm-hmm. really do anything bad. This is a really good card. You know, the closest thing I can think of that's like him is Solemn Simulacrum.
Yeah, he is like
which
the
was
green
my
Solemn
number
Simulacrum.
1 artifact. And interestingly, I do not have him on my list.
Oh, interesting indeed.
But I it's hard to argue with it. So very good pick.
Yeah, I like this guy a lot.
Okay, my number 10 is Awakening Zone. It was last in Rise of the Eldrazi, is that right?
Yeah, and it was printed in one of the first commander set.
Oh, gotcha. It's 2 and a green for an enchantment. It says, at the beginning of your upkeep, you may put a 0/1 colorless Eldrazi spawn creature token onto the battlefield. It has, sacrifice this creature, add 1 colorless to your mana pool.
I love this card.
Yeah, every upkeep, it creates a 0/1 creature that you can sack for 1 colorless mana if you want to.
And just be a blocker.
Yeah,
it's so very important.
It's ramp. It's creating creatures mm-hmm. out of nothing. It's great in token strategies, but actually, I put this in non-token.
Yeah.
Because so often you're like, I want to use this for mana once I have 2 or 3, but if somebody swings at me with a big creature, I'm going to go ahead and just, you know, throw one of these in the way.
Yeah.
And prevent the damage. So,
not
yeah,
to mention, this does stack up quickly, and you can use them at instant speed to get mana.
Yeah. It's amazing how, like, you put it on turn 3, and by turn 5, you know, you've got 2 of these things, and they've just accelerated you into something huge.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that turn 5, you can now play a 10 drop, you know, if you have no other mana rocks or anything else out.
Well, it'd be 7, because you have to play this on turn 3.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah.
But then the nice thing is, like, sometimes...
5 turns later, you could play, like, yeah, 10 or 12 drops.
Sometimes you can use this stuff to play, like, a Soul Ring or a help you pay for a Gilded Lotus that then lets you do more because you use the colorless mana to make it, you know...
To make colored mana,
sort
colored
of.
Mana,
yeah. Good card. It's actually not on my list either, actually.
So we both had 10s that the other one didn't have. Well, 10 is the area where you sort of freelance a little.
It's true. Yeah. My number 9 is a little interesting. It's a grouping of these kinds of cards, which are mm-hmm. essentially just sorcery speed ramp for the most part. Sky Shroud Claim, 3 and a green sorcery. Search your library for up to 2 forest cards and put them onto the battlefield. Then shuffle your library.
Right.
This is sort of like the big daddy of them because they're not tapped. They're just straight up on the battlefield.
And they're not basic forests.
Yes.
They're forest cards. So you can get a Bayou and a Taiga.
Yeah. Very good card. There's also stuff like Explosive Vegetation, which I think was actually reprinted in Dragons of Tarkir. And it's essentially the same thing, but it's search your library for up to 2 basic land cards and put them onto the battlefield tapped. So you don't get them that turn, but it is still, you know, doing the same thing. For 4 mana, you're changing 1 card into 2 lands.
would you consider like Cultivate and Kodama's Reach in here? They're both two and a green, and you go get two basic lands, put one on to the battlefield and one in your hand.
Yeah, essentially. Those are the three mana slots for that, and mm-hmm. there's a four mana slot. But I think just this cycle of cards is one of the most important parts to the color.
Classically green.
Yeah. Literally explosive vegetation. Couldn't say it more flavorfully.
I had these cards like in the running, and I felt really bad. I didn't actually end up with any of them in my top 10. And they're all good enough to play in decks. But yeah, there's just so much redundancy for that effect. It's mm-hmm. like, I just felt like it alone wasn't that powerful because they keep printing it.
Yeah.
But it is, as far as what green is, I mean.
It does it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the one.
My number 9 is Acidic Slime. So it's a 3 and 2 green for a 2/2 creature ooze. It has Death Touch. And it says, when Acidic Slime enters the battlefield, destroy target artifact, enchantment, or land.
Couple of things to note. The fact that it says or land, very important.
Yep.
The fact that it says Death Touch, pretty relevant.
Yep.
So that's why, because some people are like, Reclamation Sage, but Reclamation Sage only kills enchantments and artifacts.
It doesn't trade with anything because it's a 2/1.
It's a 2/1,
Acidic Slime comes in, destroys something relevant, and then blocks and kills something.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also, of course, that's just the base level. You can flicker it, you can bounce it to your hand and play it again, and you can get into these situations where you're, like, wrecking every enchantment on the board or every artifact or, just picking away somebody's lands or, mm-hmm. Doing broken stuff. So,
yeah,
this card's really good, really versatile.
Yeah. Next up for me is a Tutor at number 8. And thinking about it, this, again, could be a cycle of cards because green does this a lot in different ways, but it is the super cheap Worldly Tutor for 1 green, instant. Search your library for a creature card, reveal it, and put the card on top of it after shuffling your library.
So it's like Mystical Tutor or Enlightened Tutor,
mm-hmm.
Which are all awesome cards. I think the key here, the difference, that is the reason that I would have also put Worldly Tutor of all those tutor cards, is it's instant and it's 1 green.
So you essentially are casting it at the end of the person's end step right before you.
You don't have to save a lot of mana open to do it, and mm-hmm. you can sort of do it as a surprise. If you have something that can draw you cards, you could do it and then draw the card.
Yep.
This is just, it's what green's really good at too, which is like, that's finding like, oh, they have a Maze of Ith out and I have to get rid of it. Well, I'm going to go get my Acidic Slime, play that, destroy the Maze of Ith, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, green is very good in general for tutoring four creatures and putting them onto the battlefield, some way cheating them out. So that's my number 8.
My number 8, we haven't had a single
card in common.
Yeah, this is crazy.
But we're getting to it. We will.
Near the top, we will. Yeah. My next one is Krosan Grip. So Krosan Grip is 2 and a green for an instant. It has split second. So what that means is as long as this spell is on the stack, players can't cast spells or activate abilities that aren't mana abilities. So it can't be countered. It also can't be preempted.
Mm-hmm.
And then what it does is it destroys target artifact or enchantment. So this is guaranteed to work if you play it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Split second is something I don't think we see enough of in EDH, and it's actually very important because it really says, all right, everyone stop casting spells now. No more. Nothing else gets on the stack except for this.
Yep. So you get to do it, the thing, and that's very important because green just has trouble. Like, it's going to try and do big, broken things.
Mm-hmm.
It's, sometimes if you're against a blue deck, you can be really up against it. So being able to just, I destroy this enchantment or artifact, and I know it's going to happen is really important, yeah.
Yeah, I really like split second as a mechanic. And I think it's something, we could do a whole show on mechanics that aren't used that mm-hmm. can be really powerful in the right decks and stuff. And I think split second is one of those that, in general, is just good across every archetype of deck. Because the ability to say, like, if someone's getting into a counter war, you can literally cast that and be like, and it's over.
Yep, true.
Like, you can choose when, like, someone counters something and someone's about to counter it. I don't know if the priority, it goes around the table in a certain way. But, yeah, you can essentially stop the cycle of spells being cast, which is really interesting. Haven't really seen it used in that manner yet, but someday I'm sure it'll be out there.
But someday.
Yeah, someday. My number 7, wow, we're just cruising along here. This is great.
We are.
My number 7 is the Avenger of Zendikar. This guy's a big baddie. He was in World Wake and in Commander as well, the 2013 edition. He's 5 and 2 green for a 5/5 creature elemental. When Avenger of Zendikar enters the battlefield, put a 0/1 green plant creature token onto the battlefield for each land you control. And he also has Landfall. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, you may put a +1/+1 counter on each plant creature you control.
So he makes dudes and then makes the dudes bigger.
Yeah. So essentially, if you play him on turn 7 with just regular mana, you get 7 0/1s on the battlefield. And then if you play your land for the turn, they all become 1/2s.
And then next turn you play a land and they're 2/3s.
Yeah.
It gets out of hand so fast.
Not to mention, if you have any way of recurring this guy, flickering him, putting him back onto the battlefield. And here's the thing is, like, very rarely are you going to get less than, like, probably 5 0/1s out of this, you know, with like a soul ring or something. Like, in general, Avenger is going to come out and immediately affect the board in a big, big way.
And in a deck that has things like Avenger, you're going to play Cultivates and Kodama's Reaches.
Coat of Arms.
And this, instead of Mana Rocks, you're going to play stuff that puts more land into play because you're going to want to take advantage of it. So it's, yeah, it's super, super strong.
Yeah, in terms of like the token themes, the Avenger is, I feel like he, it's hard to beat the amount of value he puts onto the battlefield.
Yep. Okay, my number 7. Wow, we still don't have any of the same cards.
We're almost there, though. We're going to crash real soon.
Is Genesis Wave.
This card is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's 3 green and X for a sorcery. It says, reveal the top X cards of your library. You may put any number of permanent cards with converted mana cost X or less from among them onto the battlefield. Then put all the revealed cards that that were revealed this way that weren't put onto the battlefield into your graveyard. So usually in EDH, this means you cast it for like 30 and you reveal the top 30 cards of your library and put every permanent into play and then just win.
Yep.
Yeah. This is just raw power. You know, you don't even have to come up with any imaginary scenarios where you scroll rack the perfect cards into there. You just take like literally half your deck and put it onto the table. So if that doesn't win you the game, your deck, you weren't going to win.
Yeah. If that doesn't create a nightmare for Enter the Battlefield triggers, then I don't know what does.
Yeah.
Yeah, Genesis Wave is like one of those cards that's like, oh yeah, and then he Genesis Waved for 20, and then this happens.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It's like,
and then he swung for 387,000 damage, and we all died.
Yeah, I think this was in the Legacy Cube on Magic Online, and I Twin Caster Maged it. I still lost the game.
Really?
But like, we both had Eldrazi out. It was ridiculous. Like, he just Genesis Waved a little better than I did.
Oh.
But I was really happy to do it. Unfortunately, it did not turn into anything big for me. Next up, in terms of cards that are cast for a lot of mana, we have, for me at number 6, Tooth and Nail. And we still haven't overlapped.
This is actually
yet.
Very similar to Genesis Wave.
Yeah, it has a very similar effect, except this one's a little more controlled, and there are people that will play this card to just win.
Yeah, Genesis Wave is like a nuclear weapon, and this is like a surgical strike bomb. Yeah.
Yeah, so Tooth and Nail is 5 and 2 green for a sorcery. It says, choose one. Search your library for up to 2 creature cards, reveal them, put them into your hand, then shuffle your library. So that's very prototypical green.
Mm-hmm.
Or put up to 2 creature cards from your hand onto the battlefield. And the one that really makes this a sweet card is it says Entwine for 2, which means you can pay an additional 2 colorless mana when you cast this. So instead of 7 mana, it's 9 mana, and you get to do both. So a lot of people just do this to get a Geeky Geeky and a Pestermite, and they win the game. You know,
it says go find any 2 creatures in your deck, put them onto the battlefield.
Mm-hmm. They get a Triskelion and a Machias, and they've won the game.
There's so many combinations of 2 specific creatures that just win you the game on the spot that this is like, Tooth and Nail, I win.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's the main reason that Raphelos was banned, just because if they play a really early Tooth and Nail, it's very hard to stop.
Yeah, because someone could fetch out an Ulamog with this and cheat onto the battlefield as early as turn, I don't know, like 3 or 4 with the right elves deck.
With Raphelos, you can do stuff like that on turn 4. So.
So and Tooth and Nail, very powerful.
Yeah, super good card. Yeah, very similar to Genesis Wave. It's the same type of effect.
Yeah.
Here we go. So my number 6 is the same as your number 5. So
two
we can talk about it all
one
at one
stone.
Time. We basically had it rated the same.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's Craterhoof Behemoth.
Big daddy.
This is a big guy.
He just is like a giant toad. I don't know what he is. He says he's a beast, but he looks like so much more than that. I love this card. I hope it never gets reprinted so I can always hoard my copies.
It's from Avacyn Restored. It's a mythic. It's 5 and 3 green for a 5/5 creature beast with haste. Very relevant. When Craterhoof Behemoth enters the battlefield, creatures you control gain trample and +X/+X until end of turn, where X is the number of creatures you control.
Boom.
This is like a super big overrun. Overrun is what we call the type of effects that pump your whole team and give them trample.
Mm-hmm. Literally overrunning them.
Yeah. And so Craterhoof is just one of those cards where you almost never play it until you win. until you play it and win.
Yeah.
So you usually drop it. It gives all your creatures +12/+12 and trample, and then you just kill everybody or whoever's left.
I've rarely seen Crater Hoof Behemoth enter the battlefield and not kill at least two people.
Yeah.
And usually those are the last two people in the game.
Yeah. You rarely see one resolve that doesn't, like, immediately win. I don't know that I've ever seen it.
Yeah, and of course, flickering this big bad guy is even crazier. Yeah, the big one is +X/+X, where X is the number of creatures in control. So even two creatures, it's +2/+2. Like, that is not insignificant.
Well, it gives them trample.
And it gives them trample,
so if those two creatures are big, then...
The big one is trample, because a lot of times, like, I have 50 tokens, like, great, you can block five of my guys and still take a billion damage, you know, so...
But usually he's played in, like, Prosh, or, shoot, Avenger of Zendikar.
Yeah.
You put him out... You know, you make 9 0 ones, then you put Crater Hoof Behemoth out, and now you've got 11. 9 9 tens.
No, you get 11 because you get the Avenger, the nine guys, and Crater Hoof. So
then everyone dies. Yeah,
they're giant. Yeah. And they're just little plants, too. Who would have thought? Who would have thought?
Well, since I ruined your number five, I'll read my number five. It's Doubling Season. I don't actually want to talk about it yet because you have it much higher, so we'll talk about it when you get to it.
Sure. Do you want to say any words of happiness towards...
Doubling Season? Well, let's talk about... we'll talk about it when we get to it. You've got it at number two. I've got it at number five. So we'll talk about the difference there when we get there. Yeah. You want to go with your number
four? My number four is this exact same mana cost as my number 10. You have Maya Elder. If you haven't guessed it, it's Eternal Witness. It's
such a good card.
And two green. So one green for three total for a 2/1 creature, human shaman. Don't care about any of that. When Eternal Witness enters the battlefield, you may return target card from your graveyard to your hand.
So it's a regrowth, which was one in a green for a sorcery that did this, except for one extra mana, you just get a 2/2 with it.
Yep.
And also, having the card stay
Two one.
Having the card stay on the battlefield means you can flicker it, you can bounce it to your hand, play it again, you can reuse the effect a lot easier.
I see more Eternal Witnesses played, I feel like, than any other card, just because people see the inherent value and are like, great, I'm going to find a way to get this back into my hand or back onto the battlefield somehow. Yep.
And green is one of those colors that can get creatures out of its yard, you know, and so you can play this again. Yeah. And this is, I don't think I play a green deck that doesn't play Eternal Witness. It's sort of an every green deck has this card.
Yeah, the card is superbly good.
In fact, I have it one place higher. I have it at number three for me.
Oh, would you look at that? I stole your thunder.
You stole my thunder.
Your number four, though?
My number four is Greater Good.
Oh, this is one of Craig's pet cards.
Yeah, it's 2/2 green for an enchantment. It says, sacrifice a creature. Draw cards equal to the sacrifice creature's power, then discard 3 cards. So, sacrifice effects we've talked about many times, and I know the Tuck rule has slightly changed it, but sacrifice effects are still really good because of things like Insurrection, Control Magics, anything that steals your stuff, you want to sack it so they don't get it.
Yeah.
Also, you often want to sacrifice your own creature just because it has some effect when it dies. So if you've got Child of Alara or, you know, I don't know, there's a million creatures that say when this creature goes to the graveyard, do this thing. Or let's say you've got Dictate of Erebos out, which says whenever one of your creatures dies, everybody else has to sack a creature. So there's a lot of reasons to have a sack outlet. And then this one draws you cards.
Pretty solid.
Yeah, people, I think, overemphasize the fact that after you draw the cards, you have to discard 3 cards. You know, they think, well, what if I have a 2/2 out? A lot of times, even if you have a 2/2 out, it's still good to sacrifice it to Greater Good, because what if you have lands in your hand and you don't need a lot of lands?
Yeah. I mean, I'd say like 3 is what people would say is acceptable, but think about what you're doing every time you use like a looter in Magic. You go 1/1, you draw a card, discard a card. What's so bad about drawing 3 cards and discarding 3 cards? You still get to see 3 more cards, and chances are you'll have a card that will either get the card back from the graveyard or is actually better in the graveyard, like Genesis or any of those.
And if you're desperate, you can do it for less just to cycle through your deck. Because sometimes you're just like, I'm literally going to die next turn and I have to find a board wipe. Or I have to find... You know, I remember playing a game a few weeks ago where I was playing against Craig, and of course he was playing Infect, and I had 6 poison counters, and he had a guy that could put 4 poison counters on me, and it was unblockable. And I was like, I just have to dig and find a card that can stop that thing. And, you know, Greater Good helped me like dig, and then find a Maze of Ith, you know, and put that out. And that's just going to like, okay, now I can. And it wasn't efficient. Like, I might have just started with 7 cards in my hand and ended with 4, but I didn't die.
Yeah. So. And you got to see your deck, and you could make, I would rather have a 4 card hand that I could choose every card instead of a random 7 card hand, if that makes sense.
And I'd rather still be alive.
Yeah, that too. Absolutely. Yeah. That pretty valid point there. Moving on, my number 3 is, because your number three is Eternal Witness. My number three, I'm sad to see that this wasn't on your list, because I think this card is just very powerful.
It's awesome. It's banned in a lot of formats.
Yeah. Survival of the Fittest.
Yeah.
And it recently got reprinted, by the way. Not really. In Tempest Remastered, which is a Magic Online only format.
Is that really a reprinting?
Yeah, it's not a reprinting. But they bumped it up to Mythic Rare. It used to just be a rare, and this is definitely Mythic Rare status. It's one in a green for an enchantment. For green, you pay green, discard a creature card, then search your library for a creature card, reveal that card, and put it into your hand, then shuffle your library. Holy moly.
It's amazing. Yeah, it only wasn't Mythic before because when it came out, they didn't have that Mythic
right.
Rares
they didn't
yet.
Have that
yeah.
rare yet.
This card is unbelievable. I can't believe it's not on my list. I do have it in my honorable mentions. I play it in a lot of decks. It's so toolboxy too, and green is very toolboxy because yeah. a lot of their creatures have entered the battlefield effects. So what this allows you to do is always have the answer at the time you need it.
Yeah, and it's so good for just, I mean, being able to discard stuff in EDH is really actually very, very relevant and yeah. important.
A lot of times the first thing I do is discard something, go get anger.
Yeah.
Then do, and the thing about Survival of the Fittest is you don't tap it. It's not only once per turn. So then you just pay the 2 mana again, dump anger in your...
1 mana. Oh, was, 1 mana to discard it. And then,
yeah.
Yeah.
And then, is it only 1 mana?
Yeah, it's only...
Holy crap.
Yeah, it costs 2 to drop, and you can activate it for 1.
Oh, right, right. Yeah, yeah, that's what I was thinking. So yeah, you could just go get anger. Then you immediately activate Survival of the Fittest again, put anger in your graveyard, and go get something else. Mm-hmm. And it's like, anger's a card you want in your graveyard.
Yeah, exactly.
So this card's just amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so very powerful enchantment. Easily one of the most busted cards ever. I only have one, and I have to find the right places to put it. Essentially, that's how powerful it is.
Go ahead and do your number two, because...
All right, so my numero dos is Doubling Season / Parallel Live / Primal Vigor / that kind of effect.
I think specifically Doubling Season, specifically though, because Parallel Lives doesn't do the same exact thing.
Yeah, Doubling Season is incredibly powerful because it does have slightly different text than the other
Parallel versions. Lives doesn't do anything for Planeswalkers, and I think that's what puts Doubling Season into this category of like bonkersness, and also 1/1 counters, which Parallel Lives doesn't do.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. So Doubling Season is 4 and a green for an enchantment, and if an effect would put 1 or more tokens onto the battlefield under control, it puts twice that many of those tokens onto the battlefield instead. And if an effect to place 1 or more counters on a permanent you control, it places twice that many of those counters on that permanent instead. So I have an entire deck built around this enchantment, which is just Planeswalkers plus this.
In they Super Friends, it's insane.
They come down with twice as many counters. And
you basically can immediately ultimate. Mm-hmm. Is there any Planeswalker that you can't?
There's a lot that you can't.
Oh, okay.
And some don't actually have ultimates, too.
Yeah, true. Yeah. But most of them, or a lot of them, I would
say. I'd say like 85% of them you can have them ultimate. Enter the battlefield and you can ultimate them immediately. Yeah,
yeah, which is crazy because most ultimates say win the game.
Yeah, or do something that is so far-reaching and crazy that the game will never be the same after you do it.
Yeah, it's nuts. And also just token decks. So anything mm-hmm. that says put 5 1/1s into play puts 10 1/1s into play.
Yeah, and that's really where this card gets insane. It's like the Planeswalker effect is nice, but it requires a little more setup. And just in general, like Lingering Souls plus Doubling Season. Now you get potentially up to 8 1/1 flyers in the air for 3 mana.
And know, then let's say you've got Cather's Crusade that puts 1/1 counter on everything when they come into play, then all of a sudden you're double, you know, you're putting 2 1/1 counters, and I mean, that just double effect can quadruple if you...
It gets out of hand so fast.
But go ahead.
I was going to say the reason it's so high up for me is that it's one of the definite must-answer cards when it hits the table.
It's one of those cards where if somebody plays it out and says go, almost always if it's still there on their next turn, then they're going to win.
Or they are so far ahead that it's...
You almost never play Doubling Season out and then don't do something incredibly broken the very next
time.
Yeah,
you want to make sure that you can protect it or at the very least have something to do with it so someone doesn't just cross and grip it the next turn.
Yeah. I mean, I will play it out and hope it survives if, like, you look around and everybody's only got 1 or 2 cards and you think the chances are. But if it's like everyone's got a full grip of cards, then I'm just going to wait until I can either play Doubling Season and something else in the same turn, you know? Yeah, the card's super powerful. The only reason I had it lower is just there are decks that don't want it.
True.
You
this
know?
Is very true.
Yeah, there are decks that have nothing to do with 1/1 counters, tokens, or planeswalkers, in which case, or just don't have enough of those things, that Doubling Season is good. In fact, my retooled Marquesa deck, although
Marchesa is what the Wizards pronunciation guide says.
I do not trust. Okay. Small tangent. The Wizards pronunciation thing with the audio files telling me how to pronounce it, I don't agree with them. And because they've been wrong on occasions before, I don't have to. They don't actually know how pronunciation works all the time, you know, because they wanted to say Enoch and not Enoch. Mm-hmm. And then they changed it to Enoch when people were like, yo, AI makes the I sound.
Yeah. And it has on all these other cards.
Gave, who they say is Gave.
Yeah, I can't agree with that.
That's lame. Gave is already a word.
Yeah, and you would spell it like
G-A-V-E. Why yeah, would you spell it differently if it's going to be pronounced the exact same? Yeah, so I'm going to keep calling it Gave. And whatever, Marchesa is how we originally pronounced it.
Yeah. By the way, Gave just sounds better because it's Gave, guru of spores.
You know, it sounds tribal. It sounds, you know, Gave, guru of spores. Anyway, okay, enough about that.
The jokes are making themselves.
So the Marchesa deck, I turned into five color with Child of Alara. That's why I'm talking about green. Mm-hmm. Don't forget, everybody. I had Doubling Season in there originally because it's all about 1/1 counters. Took it out because it's not about putting a bunch of 1/1 counters. It's just about getting one.
It's about getting one on them, yeah.
Yeah, so that's the reason I sort of bumped it down is just that I have a lot of green decks that don't want that card. I have a lot that want it. But,
true, yeah.
Okay, well, your number one is the same as my number two, so we can talk about it now.
Hooray! Let's tell the future. Let's look deep into the future, because we need an Oracle of Moldiah. It's the Oracle of Moldiah.
Because we need an Oracle of Moldiah, and it is the Oracle of Moldiah.
Yeah, the future that she's telling is just very full of mana.
Is she talking to Neo right now, do you think?
That Oracle, oh my gosh. Yeah, and she was replaced.
She got recast.
She passed away. Yeah. Well, the Oracle of Moldiah does happen to pass away in game a lot because it is that powerful.
You have to.
Yeah. It's one of those things again. It's like, how many draw steps are you gonna give them before this thing goes away? Because guess what? Each turn gets worse for everyone else.
Yep.
It's 3 and a green for a 2/2 creature elf shaman, and it's got 3 lines of text. The first line, you may play an additional land on each of your turns.
So she's in exploration.
Exploration, yeah, pretty good. Okay, second line, play with the top card of your library revealed.
That's actually a downside.
Downside, but then you may play the top card of your library if it's a land card.
So she's sort of a Courser of Kruphix and exploration combined.
Yeah.
Sort of.
For one extra mana.
The thing about Oracle is you do this thing a lot where you look at the top card of your library, it's a land, you play it, and then you flip the top card of your library, and it's a land, and you play it. And so you just drew 2 cards and ramped.
Yeah.
And what are we always saying? What are the best things that every deck needs? Card draw and ramp. Yep. She does both. So
yeah, and really hitting 2 lands off of the top of your deck, there's nothing more satisfying because someone else around the table that doesn't have any kind of card draw has to draw their next 2 cards. And if their 2 cards are 2 lands, well, guess what? You got to filter through your lands, and you're the Oracle of Moldiah also helps you like get through like chunks of land in your deck, mm-hmm, not just mm-hmm. like, oh, there was a land on top. It's like sometimes there was 4 lands on top, and the Oracle of Moldiah is going to really pull you out of a sticky situation. Playing with the card on top is also nice if you have fetch lands and stuff. You just be like, hey, I don't want that card there anymore.
Yep.
Fetch,
shuffle it up,
shuffle away. Maybe you'll flip a land and flip another sweet card, you know?
Yep, absolutely. This is a super powerful card. In fact, when I was making my list, for most of the time I was making it, she was in the number one slot just like you.
Oh, really?
And near the end, I decided to switch it.
What'd you switch it to?
Well, I switched it to the Sylvan Library.
Aha. Now, this card is pretty fantastic.
It's a 1 and a green for an enchantment. It's a very old card. I think it's from Alpha. I remember it being around.
I think it's from Unlimited, or 4th edition is the first time it was printed, apparently.
Really?
Yep.
It wasn't in Revised?
4th and 5th.
Is Revised 4th?
It was in Legend. It was in Legends.
Legends. Uncommon. That's why. Legends was actually the first set that I owned my own cards.
So oh, really? Nice.
That's why. It's a 1 and a green for an enchantment. It says, at the beginning of your draw step, you may draw 2 additional cards. If you do, choose 2 cards in your hand that were drawn this turn. For each of those cards, pay 4 life or put the card on top of your library. So what you get to do is you get to draw 3 cards and either put 2 back or mm-hmm. pay 4 life for each one you want to keep.
Yeah. So you get the first card for free, of course.
So it's card selection.
And the second one is 4. And then the third one is 8 life total.
Yep. It sounds like a lot of life. It is. But the versatility to be able to, if you mm-hmm. really need to. And also to just stack the top of your deck sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, you can order.
Yeah, you can't take the cards that were already in your hand and put them on top of your deck. But of the 3, you can choose 1 and then put the other 2 back in any order, mm-hmm. Which is very powerful in you know, when you've got things like Genesis Hydras and things like that,
yeah,
that you want to know what's there so you can control what you're flipping when you're saying, like,
or just know when it's the best time to. It's like, hey, I don't want to draw this card yet. There's also sometimes that's like you have a miracle card up top, you don't want to draw it yet. You can just keep putting it right below the next one until it's the turn that finally, hey, Sylvan Library, this is gonna be the first card I draw this turn. Or
absolutely. And what you were saying earlier with fetch lands and things that can shuffle your library, mm-hmm. you can also say, oh, there's two lands there, I'm gonna shuffle it away so I get three new cards. And then don't discount a lot of times. You just like pay eight life, keep both these cards.
Yep.
You know, that's
and you just, definitely do that a lot.
Just having the ability to do it is very, very strong. I mean, of course I have it at number one because I love card draw. So
yeah, I think the only downside is that the four life per card does add up if you're getting greedy.
For sure.
Like it very quickly will take you to 30, then to 20, then why are you still drawing cards?
And you know, after you do it the first time, you're put two back, and now you're really only looking at one new card.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually you do just want to pay the four life just to sort of look at more cards than you've already seen. So it's not, it's awesome. What am I talking about?
Yeah, if there was a card that just said pay four life, draw a card, I'd play it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's basically what like Erebos does. I mean, he's pay two life and some mana, mm-hmm. but like, you know, we're used to paying life for cards.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. You want to do a couple honorable mentions?
Yeah, so those are our top 10. By no means are they official or, you know, totally legitimate. I mean, in my mind, this is how I just structure it and sort of my priorities, of course. Like, you can see why Doubling Season is higher up for you is because I have a lot of decks that are degenerate with this out on the board.
I mean, all of our views are sort of shaped by what our decks are and what mm-hmm. we play against. So, I mean, what we've done in the past, and it works really well, is people please go to the comment section on Rocket Jump and give us your top 10 green cards in order so everybody can see sort of what cards people are. You know, there's going to be ones that are similar. There's going to be ones that are different. And it's really interesting to see what everybody says. And we can learn a lot that way from each other.
Yeah, definitely. So my first honorable mention, turns out it is not a $30 card.
How much is it?
It's like 90.
Whoa.
So we can't talk about it. Instead, I will mention Scavenging Ooze. And Scavenging Ooze is one of those cards that kind of just gets
by. It does fly under the radar.
It does fly very far under the radar, and it's incredibly good. So the mana costs on it are very similar to Survival of the Fittest. You pay two mana, one and a green, to get it down for a 2/2 creature ooze. And then for a green, you can exile a target card from a graveyard. If it was a creature card, put a +1/+1 counter on Scavenging Ooze, and you gain one life. So big things to note here, you can exile any card in the library, not just your own. Or I mean, sorry, no, in the graveyard, not just your own. It can be a creature, it can be a land, it can be an artifact, it can be any kind of spell. And if it's a creature card, you get upside. This creature gets bigger, and you gain a life. So it gets harder to kill, and mm-hmm. you get harder to kill. And it only costs one green.
And it's graveyard hate.
It's graveyard hate, and it's very specific graveyard hate. You can do it at instant speed. You can, if someone throws like a Marchesa to the graveyard, guess what? You can just throw her back into the exile zone.
And then she never comes back.
She never comes back. Well, I mean, in your deck, she wouldn't come back. But
oh, if she was a commander, she would come back.
Yeah, in commander, she would come back. Right. Yeah.
My bad.
Yeah, but like this takes care of decks like Caridor and any other decks that want to be messing around with their graveyard. And it's so cheap, and it's something you can get out early, and people just kind of ignore.
And don't discount the fact that it can get rid of non-creature mm-hmm. cards. It's just,
and oftentimes you will want.
Yeah, because if they've got Snapcasters and stuff in their in their deck, then you want to get rid of the instances of sorceries.
Yeah, actually, couldn't someone play a Snapcaster, target the spell, and then you get rid of it within this?
I believe so. Yeah, I believe in response you could do it.
Yeah.
Don't quote us on that. I'm not a judge.
I still don't know how Trample works, so don't quote me on anything.
I'm pretty sure you can. Yeah, very good card. My card is kind of a little bit of a narrow one, but it's a very unique effect. So I thought about putting it on my list for a while, but I decided it was too narrow.
Yeah.
It's Life from the Loam. It's one and a green for a sorcery. It says, return up to three target land cards from your graveyard to your hand. But it has Dredge 3. So what that means is if you would draw a card instead, you can put exactly three cards from the top of your library into your graveyard. If you do, return this card from your graveyard to your hand. Otherwise, draw a card. So what you can do is you can choose to draw Life from the Loam from your graveyard
mm-hmm.
at the price of milling yourself for three.
Yeah.
And so that replaces your draw step for that turn.
By chance, what could you be putting into the graveyard every time?
Hopefully more lands.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, hopefully more lands. This is just really powerful in conjunction with a lot of things. Like, Titania is one of them. But there's a lot of stuff that just, wants to cycle your lands in and out. Crucible of World packages with strip mines and things like that are just very powerful.
And
with,
just fetch lands just to get more use out of them and to thin your deck even
and
more.
And with landfall type cards. And, you know, this makes explorations and burgeonings and stuff and Azusas and Oracles of Moldiah like a lot better. So it just has a lot of applications and it's very, it's a pretty unique effect. There's not a lot of cards that do stuff like this in this manner, repeatable.
Yeah, dredging is one of those, again, one of those things that people don't use enough of that could be very powerful, because being able to get something back from your graveyard is so important, and especially if it's on the card itself, you don't have to play something else to get it done. That's what dredge is great for.
Yep.
My next honorable mention is an enchantment by the name of Earthcraft, and Josh is the one that introduced this one to me.
Yeah, this card is broken.
It's a one in a green for an enchantment. Tap an untapped creature you control, untap target basic land. So obviously this is a little more narrow. A lot of decks, like your five color decks, could not play this because you don't have many basic lands. But in a monocolor deck or even a two or three color deck, this can be insane, especially with
you really like, only tokens. Need one or two basic lands out to make use of it, because you can tap it, the land again, and then tap another. Like you don't have to.
Yeah, you don't have to have a billion out there.
Right.
Especially when you have stuff like tokens that aren't doing anything.
Yep.
Otherwise, like Defender tokens or just 0/1 spores or whatever.
Earthcraft and Squirrel's Nest are just a classic infinite combo where you tap a land to create a squirrel, then tap the squirrel to untap the land, then tap the land to create a squirrel, and that's infinite right there.
Yep, make a billion squirrels.
Yep, now all you need to do is untap them all and attack, so it's
pretty
an awesome
powerful.
Card.
Yeah, I really like Earthcraft. And you showed it to me and showed me how broken it was when you played against me. I was like, holy moly, this game is over.
Yeah, that's a win the game card.
Yeah.
My last honorable mention, let's just do one more, is Garrick Wildspeaker. We've spoken of him before. He's 2/2 green for a 3 loyalty planeswalker. His plus one is untap 2 target lands.
So good.
His minus one is put a 3/3 green beast creature token onto the battlefield, and his minus four is creatures you control get +3/+3 and trample until end of turn. So his ultimate is not one of those you win the game ultimates. Really, what I love about this guy is he's ramp because his plus one is untap 2 lands, but he also does something else. So we talked about this earlier where versatility with your ramp is really good because I wanted a lot of ramp cards, but ramp cards kind of suck when you draw them on turn 15 or 16, and at least Garrick still does stuff when you draw him that late. He creates beast tokens if you want.
Yeah, not to mention he can get to his ultimate in one turn because it's plus minus four and he starts off with three. So
you can play him in like a token deck where if you put him out late in the game, you just plus one him once and then ultimate him and use him as an overrun.
Yeah, Garrick Wildspeaker is definitely one of those classic, I think one of the best in terms of Garrick for EDH. He's definitely at the top, I think.
The fact that he costs four is really good, too, because you can get him out early and start ramping yourself, and then you can always create the beast if you have to.
Yeah. I have two more here. I'm trying to think.
Do
which
them
one
both.
That one yeah, sure. Court of Calling, X, green, green, green. This got reprinted recently in M15, and it used to be a super expensive rare, and it's definitely gone down in price because it's super powerful. It's really good. It has Convoke, so your creatures can help cast this spell. Each creature you tap while casting the spell pays for one or one colorless or one mana of that creature's color. So you can search your library for a creature card with converted mana cost X or less and put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. So the fact that you can tap your own creatures to help pay for this is what makes Court of Calling so good. There's a lot of effects in green that do this, like Tooth and Nail, but this helps you create additional mana. So you could do this for like 11, you know, really easily.
Yeah,
you know, you could do some crazy stuff with it because you just have other creatures on the battlefield that you can tap to help pay for the spell.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that it's instant is like crazy,
Very crazy.
Okay, what's the last one?
The last one will be Bane of Progress. And this is a card, I believe, that was printed in Commander. Yeah, it was printed in Commander. And it's 4/2 green for a 2/2 creature elemental. So vanilla test, terrible. But when Bane of Progress enters the battlefield, destroy all artifacts and enchantments and put a +1/+1 counter on Bane of Progress for each permanent destroyed this way.
It's crazy, especially since if you're playing this card, you're like playing a creature heavy deck.
Yeah.
A lot of times it's like I lose one thing or nothing and everybody else loses like four or five things.
Yeah. And you get a giant creature in response too.
Also, you're playing green, so your mana is not mana rocks like a lot of other, like this thing, I've seen this thing come down and just like end the game because all of a sudden everybody else has half as much mana as they had a second ago, but you're still good.
It is the Bane of Progress, indeed.
It stops all progress.
Yeah. And I guess one more we should mention, just because it was on your list, and I know people will comment about it if we don't talk about it, Birthing Pod.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So the reason
it's
that
a lot like Survival of the Fittest,
yeah,
but just slightly worse.
Yeah.
But it's still awesome.
The reason it's not in my top 10 and probably not yours is it is a little more narrow, and you kind of have to have a build around me to really make full use of it to make it good, because the Birthing Pod decks in Modern that were super good were built to go from 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 to 6 and get those creatures out in that order, you know?
Yeah, I agree, sort of. I think it's still fine, though. Like, yeah, almost always you can
find a target.
Find a target, and, you know, green's so toolboxy. I just find that I'm going to play for Survival of the Fittest and Fauna Shaman, and do I really need another card that does that effect? And, you know, I do play it in some decks, and some decks want the sack outlet more than they want, like, a discard something from your hand outlet.
Yeah.
So it's, I think it is slightly worse, but I think that there are definitely decks that would want it more than a Survival of the Fittest type thing.
Yeah, that's true. All right. All right, cool. Those are our top 10 lists for green. Again, we have a comment section on the website. We also have a Twitter at Mancast. Let us know what we missed or what you guys like and are your hidden pet cards, because
these ones tend to get quite a reaction. I'm sure we're gonna miss some cards that people think are awesome, and, you know, a lot of times people are like, what about this card, and I'm like, yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, I don't know, like,
I missed it in the 20 years of Magic. I kind of missed it. And I'm sure if I look through my decks, I'll be able to find a bunch. And I'm like, wait, why didn't I mention this incredibly good card, et cetera, ad nauseum.
All right, time for the end step.
Yeah, the end step today is brought to you by copper tubes that are running through my house that you can hear all the water in the background from. I'm sure you guys noticed it popped in somewhere halfway around the podcast. That is just someone taking a shower.
Yep, not much we can do about it.
Yeah, but hopefully it becomes like white noise in the background.
It shouldn't be too bad.
Yeah,
it's happened before.
Yeah, and we also have like very directional mics, so they won't pick up as much as we're hearing in real life.
We are obsessed with our sound quality, though, so it is annoying to us that it might mess it up a little, but hopefully we'll be fine.
I mean, you could get really technical, and I'd be like, stop, so we can record the noise. Hammer time. And then I could take that noise sample and then apply it to the part of the clip and actually deconstruct that part of the audio with a clean feed of what's
happening. We won't make
right
Eli
now
do that. Let's not do that. You know, even now with this little background noise, it's still much better than Ryan's mic when we were on Brainstorm.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm still fine.
Oh,
there was like a hailstorm going on every time he talked.
Yeah, I think it was because he turned it onto his laptop microphone or his computer microphone. So you heard the room and like a fan next to it. And then whenever someone talked, it came out of a speaker. So it started echoing. And I was like, oh, no, 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 no. So the echo was pretty nice.
And it happens. And you know, that happened to us on the Marshall episode.
Yeah, I know.
Bit,
Josh.
So.
Yeah, Josh accidentally did not record him on the real mic.
So, yeah, my bad.
I
learned
the idea
since then.
Yeah. And also, I will say this, on the Rafiq episode, I also didn't do that. And I don't know if you know this, Josh, but I went back and I re-recorded my entire dialogue for the entire episode and slotted it into the Rafiq episode.
I had no idea you did that.
I do. If you listen to that episode, all my dialogue is me listening to it and then trying to copy it exactly how I said it originally on my crappy laptop mic, because I was like, I can't have bad audio quality.
Holy crap. I am going to go listen to that episode again.
Yeah,
just for that. You never even told me that.
No, it's my secret.
Well, not anymore.
Not anymore.
You just told a few thousand people.
Yeah, that's the end set for today. you can probably hear me like slur some words because I'm trying to, you know, it's that thing where, have you ever had that app where you plug it in and you are trying to read something and then plays it back to you like a half second after you're reading
it? It's so hard to do it.
Yeah, you just blah, 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 blah.
A lot of actors do that.
Oh, interesting.
They put in an earpiece and they literally, because a lot of like, especially film actors are not necessarily great at memorizing lines. And that's how they do it.
Interesting.
So you can learn that skill, but it's hard when you first
like,
try it.
Yeah, you have to like filter out your from your brain waves. And just like that, the water has stopped, and that must mean that we are at the conclusion of an episode. That'll do it for our top 10 green cards. We'll cover the other colors at some point. Don't worry, we'll get there. And we just wanted to remind you guys, go check out our sister podcast, The Masters of Modern. If you guys do enjoy the modern format or are just getting into it, these guys have a lot of episodes that sort of span the whole range of topics to cover from modern. They have really good guests, and it's just, I think, a really good place to start if you're looking to get into modern.
You can find them on rocketjump.com right next to us. You can also follow them on Twitter at TheMMCast. And also, because we did the top 10 green cards, Jimmy, you're going to be on that podcast yes. pretty soon, because they always have you come on to read what the Commander top 10 list was
yeah.
when they do their top 10 modern green cards.
Because sometimes it matches up. Other times it's like Spellskite makes it on the top 10 artifacts. And we're just like, Spellskite?
What?
Darksteel Citadel. Get out of here.
Never even play that card.
Have you ever heard of Blightsteel Colossus modern players? That's what I thought. Yeah, so I always go on there and deliver our picks. I think they're going to do another one of the colors soon that we did that they haven't covered yet. It might be white, I believe.
Oh,
so you're going to go on and do that? Yeah, I think Thalia is going to make it on that list, and she did not make it on ours.
Well, yeah, because they love two drops, and I know. We're just not quite as crazy about them in our format.
I mean, I'm trying to play Insurrection over here, so lay off me.
You're successfully playing Insurrection, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
I've seen it.
Oh, one last thing, GP Vegas.
Oh, yes, GP Vegas is coming up. It's in about a month. We're planning on having a gathering of our listeners, of the Masters of Modern listeners. We're going to gather with the Brainstorm Brewery guys.
Yeah.
Reverend Enfuego, if you're out there, hopefully we know we want to play with EDH with him. Anyway, we're kind of looking to get a count of how many listeners are planning to go to Vegas. So
and would be willing to...
And want to meet up and play.
Yeah, meet up
play.
One of the days and play.
Yeah, probably one of the evenings. We're going to get there on Wednesday. We know the GP starts...
Friday?
I think
or is it Thursday?
It's, no, I think it starts Saturday, but...
Right.
But there's events on Friday, but the mm-hmm. main event, I think, starts Saturday. Anyway, it'll probably be like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday night. Probably Thursday or Wednesday is most likely.
Yeah, maybe Thursday, just because I don't know when everyone else is getting in. I know yeah. some people might be coming in just for the Saturday, Sunday.
Anyway, it's obviously not planned, and it will be predicated, or it'll sort of hinge on how many of you are showing up and when you're all showing up. So... Mm-hmm. The best way I think to do this is email us or tweet at us. If you're going to be in GP Vegas and
yeah, just give us a general idea.
If you want to hang out and play EDH with us, or maybe we're thinking about drafting like Conspiracy, a matchup,
yes.
or maybe we'll do all of that. You know, maybe we'll just have a big night where we all get together for, you know, 4 or 5 hours and do a bunch of stuff like that. And we'll figure out a location and everything depending on what the turnout looks like it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just trying to sort of gauge that. So let us know if you're going to be there, you know, and what days you think you're going to be there. And then we can sort of start to formulate a plan.
Yeah. I'm really excited. It's going to be like the fastest, best 4 or 5 days of my like year, I think.
Yeah, I'm super stoked about it. There's going to be gambling. There's going to be magic. There's going to be meeting all the listeners. There's going to be hanging out with cool magic personalities.
And opening packs.
Opening packs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Playing
I
tons of
be
EDH.
More excited, yeah.
It's going to be awesome. So
I mean, Vegas is such a good place to have an event like this.
Vegas is awesome without magic. So yeah. then we just added the awesomest thing to a place that's already awesome. Like,
yeah.
come on. Yeah. Super stoked. Let us know. If you're on the fence about going, then, I mean, I can't think of a single reason why you wouldn't.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of just historically, this event's going to be huge, but also, like, you're not going to go to a GP this big ever, maybe ever again. You know, you never know. Like, this kind of thing could be a once-in-a-lifetime sort of event, and I'm not even being hyperbolic when I say
mean,
that.
I mean,
like,
it's hard for it to get much bigger. At a certain point,
yeah.
they would have to split it up and do an East
yeah.
Coast one and a West Coast one at the same time just to keep the numbers manageable, because you can't literally have a tournament that's got 20,000 people in
they
it.
They actually want to, they will split the mm-hmm. Event into two if they get enough people registering. Also, they're giving away, like, moxes and stuff with the more people that register.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
I haven't won one yet, which sucks, but whatever.
I don't think they've done the drawing quite yet, but you know, hey, it's a good thing to gamble on, right?
Anything's a good thing to gamble on, Jimmy. All right, guys, so we will see you next week. Thanks for listening.
Yep, and we'll talk to you soon.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com. Or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.